This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. When William Scott was sworn in to lead San Francisco's police department in January, he became a rare chief for the city, one hired from outside the ranks. He came from Los Angeles, where he was deputy police chief and that department's highest-ranking African-American officer. He was also recognized as an emotionally intelligent leader. That was a valued quality in San Francisco, where former chief Greg Sirr was forced out of office last year after some highly publicized officer-involved shootings. KLW's Ben Trefney sat down with Chief Scott to talk about his new job leading the San Francisco Police Department.
So you, in the history of the San Francisco Police Department, are the third person to come from outside the rank and file to take over as police chief. So what challenges has that caused you to face coming into this job?
Well, that historically, I mean, just highlights how much of an honor it is to have this opportunity. But coming into an organization from the outside, it presents some challenges because I have to learn the organization, I have to learn the people, I have to learn the political climate, learn who the partners are, the community partners that will help us to do our job more effectively. But it also has some upside because coming in, you also don't have, you're coming in with fresh eyes, or I'm able to come in with fresh eyes. Come in with a different perspective because I've been with another organization for 27 years, so it allows me to come in with a little bit different perspective than I would have if I was here for 27 years.
So. Well, I have a question about that, too. I mean, what did you learn in that time with the LAPD and in your career that you're bringing here that are ideas that you had? If I was chief, then this is what I would want to do.
Yeah, well, here's a good thing. There's a lot of commonalities in police work. You know, good police work is good police work. You know, we solve crime. We solve homicides. We try to figure out who's breaking into cars. That is pretty much similar. The departments, the way they're structured, are somewhat different because in Los Angeles, it's a very large organization, about 10,000. San Francisco is smaller, with about 2,300 sworn. So the structure is a little bit different. You know, Los Angeles is structured a little bit different in that it's such a large organization. It's a very tight structure. And San Francisco is a good structure, but it's a lot more organic at the station level in terms of the captains. The district captains have a lot of leeway to kind of run their districts according to what's needed in the districts. And that's a good thing, but without an organizational structure, that can be a bad thing too. I think we have a pretty good balance that can be enhanced. So what I learned in Los Angeles, to your question, and some of the systems that I think I learned coming up through LAPD will be helpful for me here, just to enhance what we're doing.
Well, so like what, for example?
Well, for instance, in Los Angeles, we had a risk manager, a specific position for risk management. Now we have that here as well, but the way it was done there, it was had more reach over the entire organization in terms of the decision making and things that were done. There was a lot of input, so and that was a good thing.
What is an example of risk management? Is that like the ways in which one would handle a pursuit or dealing with a crime, or what do you mean?
Well, you try to reduce the risk. I mean, law enforcement in general is a very risky occupation. Pursuits happen. There's
officer-involved shootings.
Uses of force, you know, whether it be a shooting or just a use of force. So there are high-risk things that we have to do in the course of our job. A risk manager here or Los Angeles or anywhere else, that person tries to reduce the harms, reduce the risks, you know, make us better. When we see training opportunities based on lessons learned, that we spread those throughout the organization. And so there's... Because, you know, where I came from was such a big city.
And sprawling.
Sprawling, exactly. So we really had to, by necessity, had to really push things out. Where here, you know, it's a lot more relational. Everybody knows everybody because it's a smaller department. So it's easier to do things word of mouth. It's easier to do things informally. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad thing, but I think the structure helps with consistency. So you're making sure that things are being driven organizationally and not organically. So that's something that we can improve on, I think.
So is that a new hire, this risk manager position, or are there
more
hires?
We have a risk manager here, but we're just trying to enhance what we do. For instance, employee relations issues. We added a position, a commander position, that works directly for the chief of staff. And the chief of staff really has all hands on everything, but that person also is the point of contact for employee relations issues. So now you have one person that who's the point of contact, and you have that consistency. And that goes into risk management, because when you have consistency, you're not doing things, you know, a number of different ways, and your training and advice is more consistent. So that was, I think, a value added. But a lot of that came from just kind of my experiences from in my travels.
That's William Scott. He's chief of the San Francisco Police Department. So regarding the community focus of San Francisco, smaller neighborhoods, the captains of different precincts, they have relationships with the community. That's one of the things, actually, that caused problems in the past. It seems, especially in Bayview, for example, when Mario Woods was killed in an officer-involved shooting, and then some subsequent issues and shootings that happened that ended up leading to the ouster of your predecessor. Police community relations nationwide in San Francisco obviously are really big issues. Like, how do you see building trust in the community, especially I would focus on Bayview too, which is actually right where we're sitting right now.
Well, building trust is all about relationships. And I think just for me coming in here as a brand new chief from a different city, from a different organization, I think the relationships are very good here. Can it get better? Yes. Now, we've created a community engagement division. Again, the organizational structure to put a commander in charge of our community engagement. And that was one of the Department of Justice Collaborative Reform Initiative's recommendation that we tighten things up in that regard.
One of the 272 recommendations.
272, and it was a good recommendation. So, because we were doing a lot of good community engagement, but in terms of structure, systems, what I've talked about, consistency, having it come from an organizational instead of an organic level, you still give the district captains a chance to do what they need to do organically or locally, but there's a structure where a commander now working out of this, you know, headquarters really gets the chance to see what everybody's doing, promote best practices, so we have some consistency across the organization. And I think that will make us much better in terms of our community relations, community engagement. It'll make it much tighter. When we see something that we believe is the best practice, we can push it across the organization.
More consistency.
Exactly.
So regarding the 272 reforms that are recommended by the U.S. DOJ, we had a question from one of our listeners. His name's Alexander Post, and he works for the Office of the State Defender, actually, State Public Defender. So the U.S. DOJ listed 272 reforms. Do you expect to tackle all of them?
Yeah, we do. We do. We fully inspect them. The Mayor Edwin Lee said early on, even before I took this position, that we embrace it. We asked for the DOJ to take a look at our department. So early on that we would adopt all of the recommendations, that's what we fully intend to do. And some of them are easier than others. You know, some of them are going to take some time.
But which ones are some easy ones?
Well, I'll give you one. One of the recommendations was a recommendation that supervisors respond to reportable use of forces, make that mandatory. Now, supervisors responded in the past, but the way the policy was written, it wasn't mandatory. Now it is. I mean, that was an easy one. We recrafted the policy. Policies in place, now we just have to make sure we adhere to it.
That's accountability.
It's accountability. It speaks to accountability, and it was under that section of accountability. Some of them are a little bit more challenging. You know, the ones that deal with our data, some of our data is a product of our infrastructure, our technology infrastructure. It takes budget. It takes technology, planning.
I've understood historically, and I mean, you're newer to the department sort of than I am, actually living in San Francisco for quite a while, that technology has been way outdated in San Francisco Police Department. And I mean, I think that this goes across all kinds of institutions if you're not in Silicon Valley at one of those big giants, but that is a huge challenge to take on.
Well, yeah, and the Department of Justice, they recognize that. We have some challenges. We don't think it's insurmountable by any stretch of the imagination, but and we were in the process of building our technology out. Now we have a reason for a sense of urgency to get it done, because what it will do for us once we get to where we need to be in our terms of our technology, it'll allow us to capture the data that we need to really understand how we police the city. You know, and data is only as good as what you do with it. It gives us an opportunity to bring in some academic partners to really take a look at who we're arresting, who we're stopping, who we're using force on, and draw some policy decisions based on that, some training decisions based on that. But you need good data to do that.
Well, it seems to me if you are willing and able to take on 272 reforms, to run a department of 2,300 sworn officers, and to improve your data collection and your technology, I mean, that seems practically impossible from a resource perspective. I mean, how can you take all of that on realistically?
Well, you have to have a plan. I mean, one of the recommendations was the strategic planning piece of this, is that we need to quickly put together a strategic plan to map out how we're going to do this. This work is not impossible. I mean, the recommendations, but we have to do it always keeping in mind what we're here for, public safety. I mean, we still have a job to do to respond to 911 calls, the 311 calls, protect the city. And we can't get lost on that, because the recommendations will make us better, in my professional opinion. Once we implement these recommendations, we'll be a better police department. We'll be able to better protect the city. So one goes with the other, and it's not an impossible task. It is going to take resources. It is going to take money. The mayor is committed to that, and you know, we have to make it happen. And as chief of police, you know, I'm first and foremost, I have to be the leader in making sure we do what we need to do to get there.
That's William Scott. He is chief of police of the city of San Francisco. One of the concerns in policing, and I think across all kinds of institutions in society, is how people in roles of authority deal with people with mental illness. I think this is a really big issue for police officers especially. I think this is one of the things that can lead to misunderstandings and officer-involved shootings or uses of force. So do you see some reforms that you may be taking on in order to improve training or abilities to deal with people with mental illness by your staff?
Yes, absolutely. And some of that we were already in the process even before the report finally got adopted. Our department was already in the process of doing a lot of what was recommended. So we have to continue to do it and finish, and then we have to make sure that we are adhering to the policies and the training. The best example of that is that we were already formulating our crisis intervention team and a component. I think we have somewhere around 700 officers already trained in crisis intervention techniques. And we also have rolled out a field training component, field tactics component, for the officers working the street to really practical hands-on training to understand how to bring those resources to bear when we need them. So these officers are trained on how to deal with individuals in mental crisis, and the whole idea is to slow things down, get the right people in the right places, the right people communicating, time and distance, and that is the basis and the cornerstone of de-escalation.
How much training did they receive?
Well, the field tactics training is one component. The original training was 40-hour training, so really a full week of training. By the end of the summer, we will have trained the entire department on the first part of that training. Then the field tactics training is being rolled out. It's going to take about 2 years to get everybody trained. The people that are coming through the academy are getting trained while they're in the academy, and of course they'll have opportunities for refresher along the way, but it's a process, because you can't pull everybody out of the field and train them at one time, because we still have to respond to calls and have officers deployed in the streets.
So with that training and then with these other reform efforts that you're pushing forth, how will you measure success and how will you hold yourself accountable for those?
Well, with this, I think one of the easy measures is how are we doing on our incidents of force being used, particularly with individuals who we believe to have some type of mental mental crisis or mental illness. And that's measurable. At least the force part is measurable. Sometimes if there's because of HIPAA or whatever, you don't know whether somebody is a diagnosed person. But a lot of times the indicators are there. So, but just the raw numbers in terms of force, one measure of success is, are we reducing the number of force-related incidents? That's an easy measure. And we truly believe that this tactic, I mean, the training that we're doing and the tactics, if we apply them, that we will be able to de-escalate and reduce some of our uses of force.
How about with the other reform efforts? I mean, do you have timelines set out? And are there ways in which the public can see how accountable you are?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have timelines. The DOJ Collaborative Reform Initiative is an 18-month process. So the Department of Justice will provide technical assistance for 18 months. During that 18 months, they're going to do periodic progress reports. I think our first one is due sometime this summer, I think in the end of June. At the end of the 18 months, they will do a progress report and tell us where we are. But along the way, we will be transparent with the public in terms of, right now on our website, there's a little, it's only a pie graph type of, a pie chart type of tracker, and it basically tells how many of the reforms that we have submitted to the DOJ for completion or checkoff, how many are in progress, how many are waiting for approval at our level, and the public will be able to see what those are. We report to the police commission on a regular basis. We report to the Board of Supervisors on a regular basis upon their request on where we are. Our captains and command staff are always putting that information out to the public. So we do plan to enhance the website to even provide more detail in terms of where we're tracking. And it's not a checklist type of thing. I mean, you might say recommendation one, check. It doesn't work. It's not that simple. What we need to do and what the public, I think, expects of us is when we change the policy, like our use of force, that was a huge recommendation. So we revamped our use of force policy. That's been done. The police commission did a great job. We got a really tight policy, good policy. Now, do we adhere to it? So that's a process that's going to take time because we have to see over time whether our officers are really adhering to the policy. So a lot of the recommendations are like that. We can create a policy. We can create a system. Then there's kind of a testing period to see if we're doing it. And that's really the real test. Because in order to be a 21st century police department, to get to where we want to get to, you make the change and then you have to really practice what you say you're going to do. And that's the test. So that piece, the DOJ will monitor. And even after this is done, we want to continue to make sure that these recommendations are institutionalized, not just a checklist on a piece of paper and say we did it. We have to actually live it.
Thank you very much. Okay. I really appreciate your time.